First edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yose, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Thursday. Support for WEAA traffic and MTA report is provided by Sherwin-Williams. Coming up in the second hour of the show, you know what it is. It's Thursday. It's the infamous, the notorious NWA Sports Report. All the usual suspects. This week, we're going to start off the show with, we're going to have two guests from Morgan's football team, the quarterback, Eli Stanley, as well as the running back, Josh Chase, both in studio. The season is about to start. College football is about to start. Pro football is about to start. A lot of people are in heaven right now as far as that is concerned. That's all coming up on the NWA Sports Report, plus talking about Jim Brown as well and the Kyrie Irving trade. Mayweather, all of that. All coming up in the second hour of the show on the NWA. A little bit later in the first hour, we're going to open the phone lines and ask our listeners to engage us in a conversation about law enforcement in Baltimore. What do they think about where we are as a city? And that is going to happen after we speak to the Baltimore City State's Attorney, Marilyn Mosby. She's in the studio with me right now. State's Attorney Mosby, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
Good to see you as always.
You as well.
Before we get down to work, let's remind our listeners to make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yose. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share it with the people unless you don't want me to, and of course, I will not. As I said, Marilyn Mosby is in the studio. Let's get right into it and start from the top. Our newspaper this week printed published an article with the headline, "Questionable Body Cam Video Released, Officer Cleared," by one of our reporters. And I want to quote directly from the article where Kevin Davis says, the police commissioner says, "We must not misconstrue mistakes in judgment as criminality. Nothing questionable. The recreation was captured on another officer's body camera, and it is not staging." Our reporter took that statement and other statements by Kevin Davis to believe that this officer had been cleared of wrongdoing. You are saying this officer has not been cleared of wrongdoing.
So what I'm saying is that, no, this officer has not yet been cleared of any sort of wrongdoing. It is still in the hands of the Internal Affairs Division of the Baltimore Police Department. That incident, as well as the other two prior incidents, it's been several sort of incidents where it's been a question of whether it's been planting or reenactment or recreating. And in this case, this has not yet been determined.
Then we are going to, I'm going to right now apologize on behalf of my newspaper, first of all, for not getting that 100% right. And we'll print a correction in next week's newspaper. But I want to make that apology right now.
There was an opinion before the investigation was complete.
Right. And that opinion definitely led others to believe that the investigation was over and that this officer was cleared. And that brings up the issue of these, quote unquote, and I'm using air quotes, reenactments of crime scenes. From the first time that I saw the very first video mm-hmm. that is in question, of the officer going into the alley and then coming back out and then coming back and then discovering drugs in this alley. And then the response by the police commissioner was that this was a reenactment, or by the BPD, that this was a reenactment. We have been saying on our show for weeks, ever since that story broke, that there's no such thing as within the confines or context, rather, of law enforcement. There's no such thing as reenactments.
I think that this is why it was so important for me to come out and say, you know, what the policy is going to be going forward. Mm-hmm. That when it comes to respecting the integrity of the evidence gathering process, which is essential for the prosecution of all cases, whether it's reenacting or recreating, reenacting the discovery of evidence and the seizure of evidence cannot be the face of policing in Baltimore. And I have to say that the moment that an officer decides to do that and then excludes that from his statement of probable cause, it then goes to his credibility. And when you look at the case law from a prosecutorial perspective, Giglio versus United States, once it's a misrepresentation of the truth, that misrepresentation of the truth goes to the credibility. We are then required to disclose that incident to defense attorneys. And in all likelihood, not only will that disclosure, it will then lead to impeachment and admissibility in every single one of those cases. And so what I've come out and said is that we are not going to move forward on any reenactments or recreations of the discovery and seizure of evidence. You cannot act like, you know, when your body camera is turned on that you just discovered evidence for the first time when you have not, because there's a pre-recording from 30 seconds before. And I've said very candidly, you know, that I'd rather get rid of 43 cases than undermine the public trust that's needed in the 50,000 cases that we prosecute a year.
So you're saying that 43 cases have been dropped in total. Is that what you're saying?
As of right now, I have updated numbers, but that was as of last week. 43 cases have been dropped in that latest incident.
And just in that, just in that one incident?
In that one incident.
Uh-huh.
That was 43 cases that came after this last incident.
Right. And so in total, though, because there are three questionable body camera footage episodes, in total, there are dozens more that are being investigated and dozens more that will be, have been or will be dropped. Is that correct?
Well, I can tell you of the three incidents, from the first to the second to the third, there's been hundreds of cases.
Hundreds
of cases that my office has to expend valuable resources in determining and looking at each and every case based upon, again, whether or not the officers in question are material witnesses in the case, seeing if we can find corroborating evidence to prove the case. And we are proceeding on some cases, but in other cases where the officers are material witnesses, we are not.
Again, I will repeat that the fact that, as you're stating, State's Attorney Mosby, that this officer has not been officially cleared, that it's still within the context of internal affairs. We apologize for printing that he was cleared. That was the impression that was given. But within the context of our article, we quote Kevin Davis as saying, quote, "The decision to drop cases was a bad call." What do you say to that?
Well, I can just say that I disagree. And, you know, as a prosecutor, ethically, we have to follow the law, and you can't get the bad guys at any expense. And so, you know, I've looked all across the country and checked with other jurisdictions. And I know I came across a case in Pueblo, Colorado, where an officer pretty much did the same thing. He and I don't think there was ill intent, because he searched a vehicle and found drugs and weapons and forgot to turn his camera on. But then he came back and turned his camera on and then said, essentially, while he was on the stand, it was a question, because he acted as if he had discovered it for the first time when he turned the body-worn camera
on. And he didn't.
And he didn't. And so the same thing, that district attorney in Pueblo, Colorado, did the same exact thing that I did, understanding and recognizing that this is a misrepresentation of the truth, and we cannot proceed on that. He dismissed that case. He had to issue Brady letters in every single one of the other cases that that officer was involved in, which essentially discloses that incident, and it has an impact on the remaining cases.
Understood. I'm going to come back to your relationship with the commissioner in a moment, but we broke the news on the air yesterday that an eighth officer has been charged federally charged with racketeering by the federal government. Sergeant Thomas Allers, 47 years old, I believe he is, or 49 years old. From Linthicum has been charged. He's the eighth officer charged in this racketeering scandal. This combined with the evidence planting or not planting, however, evidence planting, reenactments, this level of misconduct, or at least perceived misconduct, alleged misconduct within the Baltimore Police Department, it cannot be making your job as state's attorney and your the work that you do in your office easy at all.
Well, no, it's not easy. And like I said, we've had to expend a great deal of resources in assessing each and every one of those cases. But what is even more troubling for me is, you know, this undermining of public trust. Mm-hmm. You know, our communities are already distrustful of the criminal justice process and the system. And that has a direct impact on public safety. When we go before the juries, we say this is a bad person that deserves to be convicted, you know, we need that trust in order for the jury to know that we're not just going after another young man, or, you know, to understand and recognize that we're pursuing justice and that this is the individual that did it. But in the end, you know, we'll continue from my perspective to do our part to restore public trust and confidence in the criminal justice system. And that's another reason why it was so important for me to say I will not be proceeding on those types of cases when it comes to the reenactments.
So obviously there are inherent, I think, and we've discussed this before on the show, State's Attorney Mosby, there is an inherent push and pull in the relationship between the state's attorney's office and police departments all across the country at the same. And that's just kind of the nature of how the criminal justice system works.
Uh-huh.
At the same time, you have to have a good working relationship
mm-hmm.
with the BPD, specifically this commissioner. You and we saw there was a public interview with the two of you. You do, at least publicly, have stated that there is a good relationship between you and Kevin Davis.
And so, yeah, what I can say is that we do have a great working relationship. And for a very long time, the media has still tried to drive a chasm between my office and the police department. I can tell you that we prosecute 50,000 cases a year in Baltimore City. We have a 93% felony conviction rate. We would not have that without, you know, our working relationship with the police department. When we look at, you know, the number of homicides that my prosecutors are handling on a daily basis, and I just got to say, the national average for homicide prosecutors is to handle 20 cases. We've experienced a 20% increase in the number of homicides that we're handling. My prosecutors have 54 on average. And, you know, even despite that, we have an 80% conviction rate. We work closely with the police department in order to obtain that. When we look at the BPD designated public enemy number ones, we've convicted every single public enemy number one. Among the 11 that have been convicted, they are serving a combined 6 life sentences plus 598 years. We have the Gun Violence Enforcement Division, which was created under my administration, where we house 6 police detectives to go after the worst of the worst in these gun violations. So again, this partnership is working. We would not have the success without the police department. And so, no, there is no sort of chasm. But at the same time, we have to agree to disagree.
Understood, understood. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yeo, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. I'm in the studio with Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby. State's Attorney Mosby, and let me remind listeners that after our conversation with the state's attorney, we're going to open the phone lines at 530-410-319-8888 and engage a conversation with our listeners about law enforcement in Baltimore City. So you can call in and make your comments and insights and thoughts known at that time. But let me continue with you, State's Attorney Mosby. We talked about the relationship between you and Kevin Davis and the relationship between the SA's office and the Baltimore Police Department. What I want to ask you about is I've seen some of the comments that have been aimed at you since your decision to indict those 6 officers connected to mm-hmm. to the death of Freddie Gray. Much of what I've seen and know personally firsthand is that naked racism was connected to a lot of the vitriol aimed at you.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it draped in or kind of shrouded in protection or a belief in police departments and the job that law enforcement officers have to do. But quite frankly, it must be disturbing for you to have been the target of much of that racist, virulent racism. I just want to ask, has it, since you indicted those 6 officers, has that subsided in the years since then? Or is it still that same level of anger, racist anger aimed at you, connected to this, the decision, the very bold, courageous decision that you made?
So what I can say is that, you know, initially after I charged the six officers in the Freddie Gray death, I did receive a lot of hate mail and death threats. And what I had to learn very early was not to learn. I had to learn not to internalize that. And what I understood pretty quickly is that it was so much greater than me. I felt like, you know, looking back now, I think it was a precursor to some of the vitriol that we see happening even under this federal administration, and some of the, you know, from what happened in Charlottesville to, you know, the Confederate statutes. But what I realized is that it was so much greater than me. And it was not so much about Marilyn Mosby, but what Marilyn Mosby represents. When you consider the fact that a prosecutor is the one who decides who's going to be charged, what they're going to be charged with, what sentence recommendations they're going to make.
Right.
The prosecutor is one of the most powerful actors, is the most powerful actor in the criminal justice system. The criminal justice system has had a disproportionate impact on communities of color. When you look at the numbers, 95% of the prosecutors in this country are white, 79% are white men, and as a woman of color, I represent 1% of all elected prosecutors in this country. And so when I understood that, I was able not to internalize all of it, because at first it is pretty overwhelming. And at the end of the day, understanding and recognizing it is greater than me. You know, there was accountability that had been had that hasn't necessarily been had on a national scale, you know, when it comes to justice, applying justice fairly and equally to everybody, regardless of one's sex, religion, or occupation. That accountability led to exposure. You know, a week after I charged those officers, the Department of Justice came in here and exposed the discriminatory policing practices of one of the largest police agencies in this country. That exposure then led to reform. We have right now a federally enforceable consent decree, and that even despite the federal administration that was trying to forestall it, is in place. And so right now we are in a state of change, and it doesn't feel comfortable, especially for the police department, but it's necessary.
Despite the racist anger that has been aimed at you in response to your indictment of those six officers, you still enjoy tremendous support from your community.
Absolutely.
And you pride yourself, your office prides itself on the community outreach that you've done since you've been in the chair as state's attorney. Do you want to talk about some of the stuff?
Yeah, I think it's really important, you know, from a traditional sort of prosecutorial perspective, your role is to be reactive. And we're doing that. We are doing our jobs. We have a 93% felony conviction rate. We're convicting the worst of the worst and getting them off our streets. But it's also important, for far too long, we haven't really addressed those systemic root causes as to why crimes take place. And so I've taken a holistic approach to prosecution. I've created a crime control and prevention division that focuses on getting to our young people before they get to the criminal justice system. So we have initiatives, especially right now, where we have an increase in youth violence, where we expose young people to the positive careers in the criminal justice system. I come from five generations of police officers. I understand the importance that these hardworking, good officers that are risking their lives, taking time away from their families, the dedication that it is and that it takes to do that job. Well, the Junior State's Attorney Program, you can probably remember when we had Officer Friendly in our schools.
Yeah.
We had a rapport with law enforcement. That's something that we're missing now. And so we expose these young people, 45, for the past 3 years we've done it, to the positive careers. They start from the beginning of a case all the way to the 911 call center, to the evidence control room, to the Foxtrot, to the BPD boat, Federal Circuit District Court, and at the culmination of the 6 weeks, they do a mock trial competition at the University of Baltimore School of Law, where they can then see themselves as police officers and judges and prosecutors. We paid them this summer, and that's another collaboration that we did with the police department we wouldn't have been able to do without, you know, the working relationship that we have. We also have the Aim to Be More program for, you know, first-time nonviolent felony drug offenders. They go through a probationary period where they learn life skills and job training skills. They do community service, and at the end of that probationary period, they give having a job and their felony records are wiped clean. Why am I doing that as a prosecutor? Because we know what ends up happening when our young people get these felony convictions. They can no longer apply for a job, no longer apply for housing, can't go back to school because they can't get any financial aid. And so what other recourse do they have but to go out doing what they were doing in the first place? We've had some young people who have gone from being homeless to now being enrolled in BCCC and, you know, community college and getting their GEDs and have a career. That is the way in which we can long-term address these issues.
Final question to you. I asked this of Kevin Davis several months ago. If a good police, quote, a good police officer, a police officer that does his job, does his or her job, in a dignified manner, upholding the honor of law enforcement is the way it should be. But they know that other officers are dirty, mm-hmm. or engage in misconduct. Can that officer who knows that another officer, without telling, without talking about it, without disclosing or reporting, can that officer be a good officer? Kevin Davis said no.
So what I would say is no, because if you're complacent and you're silent about it, that's the problem. And that's the culture that we're attempting to change. You know, I can just say that having come from my house was referred to as the police house. You know, my grandfather was not only a paternalistic figure to my family, but to the entire community. I was just recently in a coffee shop. And this man walked up to me here in Baltimore and said, "Aren't you the state's attorney?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Let me just say thank you. Your grandfather, Mr. T, he helped save my life. I was one of those troubled kids that I would come to your house on a regular basis for. And that was somebody that I really looked up to." That's what we're lacking right now. And that's what we need more of.
Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby, thank you for coming in. You have to leave, correct?
Yeah.
Unless you don't have to. If you have to leave.
I can stick around for a second longer. I can stick around for a few minutes longer.
All right. That's a beautiful thing. So then we'll go to a quick break, but we'll talk a little bit longer with State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby. Thank you. You're listening to First Edition. Stay tuned. Welcome back to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. I'm in the studio with Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby, who graciously has said she will sit for a few more minutes and talk to me. And we are going to take your phone calls. We're going to open the phone lines. I'm not getting into people asking you questions unless you want to.
I can't do that.
All right.
I have one other event, but I know you had a couple other questions.
But you can call and line up 410-319-8888. We will take your comments after my conversation with Marilyn Mosby. So call in. You wanted to talk about one of the programs in your office, the pop-up program?
So, yeah, I'm really, really excited. And I guess it's a recap to what we've been doing this summer. What we are experiencing right now is an increase in youth violence.
Right.
And when we look at the crime trends, we realize that on Friday nights between the hours of 6 and 9, that there was a significant increase. So I partnered along with, you know, the police commissioner, Mayor Pugh, the Baltimore School Police, DTLR. We had a number of public-private partnerships, more than 31. We said that we were going to provide some sort of recreational opportunities for our young people to keep them out of harm's way and to give them something productive to do.
Right.
So for 12 weeks, every Friday night for this past summer, we've gone to skate night and laser tag and pool parties. And we've done that every single week. And we've touched over 2,437 children. And you got to think about that. I mean, these are young people who were out of harm's way and could have been doing something unproductive, but were otherwise with us doing something productive. And it was such a success that we're considering doing something like that throughout the school year, but not every week.
Well, understood.
Right.
You were also connected to the Baltimore Ceasefire Movement, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Every week leading up to ceasefire, we engaged people who were involved with it, Erica Bridgeford, LNG, who were the ones who kind of organized it from the beginning.
And spearheaded it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And ultimately, even though two people lost their lives during that 72-hour period, one of the things, there were so many services that were provided for people. I mean, is that type of kind of grassroots activism and organizing is what we need in our city. And I think I'm praying that we've gotten to this tipping point, S.A. Mosby, and that we've just made this. Hopefully we're making a decision to do things differently in our city. What are your thoughts about
that? So I think what they were able to do was awesome. And I think that's what it's going to take to really change the trajectory of where we're going in our city. You know, when I look at other communities, I really feel like we've lost our sense of community, right? Like, we don't look out for one another the way that we used to. It's all about self. And when we look at other communities, like the Cherry Hill community, when they were experiencing a record level of violence and how they stepped up from, you know, the faith community to community leaders to the seasoned, I don't like to say senior folks, within the community to safe streets, they stepped up and they made a difference in their community, but it was only when they said, we're not going to be complacent about this.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, for far too long, looking at 2015, 344 homicides,
right.
2016, 314, we are well up to 234.
Yeah, we're on pace for over 300 again,
which is crazy. We have got to stop being complacent. And you know, the police can do their jobs and getting individuals off the streets. I do investigations. I have the most talented prosecutors in the country. We will zealously advocate. But it's really the community that's going to make a difference. And so the efforts that they did with the ceasefire, I commend them. And I wish we had more of them throughout the city.
Well, there's supposed to be another one in November, actually. And I know you have to go, but I just wanted to ask, you just talking about your prosecutors, your team. The fact, though, that they handle an average of 54 cases compared to 20 across the nation, that is astounding.
Mm-hmm.
In a city that is only 600 some odd thousand people.
Mm-hmm.
That's an extraordinary workload, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It is an extraordinary workload. And when you consider all 50,000 cases that we prosecute a year in the state's attorney's office, you know, more than 5,000 a year, it's a great deal of work. But you don't go into this for money. When you become a prosecutor, you go into it because you're passionate about making a difference in your community. And I'm very proud of my prosecutors. I have some of the most talented, seasoned, skilled prosecutors in the country. And the barriers that we're up against in the home of witness intimidation, where the stop snitching mentality began, you know, this is once something that I had a conversation with the governor about at our latest meeting, was I was pointing out the fact that, you know, my prosecutors have this increase and there's been this increase in victim crimes. But what are we doing for the community? Right. Like, at the end of the day, in 2016, we had to relocate. People have to feel comfortable coming forward. They have to feel like they're going to be protected. We relocated 131 families because of the record violence that we're, you know, talking about carjacking, talking about robberies, talking about the homicides. We're also at a record pace of having to relocate families. We're already had to, just this year, relocate 80 families. When last year, it was 131. So that was one of the requests that I made from the governor, our additional resources so that we can better protect victims and witnesses. I can say that we also talked about, you know, cross-designating my attorneys in federal court so that we can get lengthier sentences for individuals that choose to carry firearms and are violent repeat offenders. So that's something else that we talked about. So I was optimistic about the overall sort of collaboration that was encouraged by the governor, but I was also encouraged by the fact that there was a sense of urgency that came not just from the stakeholders within Baltimore City, but the stakeholders even outside of the city.
Okay. Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby. State's Attorney Mosby, thank you for coming in and giving us a little bit more time than
no problem,
we originally were going to get. We appreciate you.
Thank you. All the best
to you as always.
Thank you.
And your family.
Appreciate it.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. What do you want to talk about as far as law enforcement in our city? Whatever you want to talk about, the phone lines are open. Give us a call, 410-319-8888. You're listening to First Edition. Here on WEAA 88.9, I'm Sean Yose, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. We just concluded our conversation, my conversation, with Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby. Now we're going to open the phone lines, 410-319-8888, to engage a conversation about law enforcement in Baltimore. We broke the story. We broke the name of the officer, actually, when I first got it. The eighth officer indicted federal charges of racketeering, Sergeant Thomas Allers, I believe, age 49, is how old he is. He believes he's from Linthicum, Maryland. So he's the eighth officer charged federally for racketeering. Allegedly, we had the Mod Squad on yesterday. We disclosed the fact that he's accused of stealing birthday money from a child, robbing residents, fraudulent police reports, the whole nine. It's very similar to the other seven charged with racketeering. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. It is what it is. I've said 10,000 times on these airwaves that the vast majority of the men and women sworn to serve and protect in the Baltimore Police Department do so admirably, do so with honor, do so without misconduct and black marks on their record. But these officers that have been charged, indicted, and the ones who are engaging in this type of behavior is really creating a devastating image for the Baltimore Police Department, one that is, they're getting a national reputation for misconduct. And that, I believe, is incredibly unfortunate for our city and for the BPD and for the men and women who do their job and do it admirably. However, the issue is what it is. We heard the state's attorney say point blank, the whole notion of reenacting crime scenes cannot be done. And you heard what she said. It cannot be done. And she is in stark contrast with Police Commissioner Kevin Davis, He said that she should not have dropped these cases where there were these videos showing reenactments or planting of evidence. He said it was a bad call. They are in absolute disagreement, even though you heard the state's attorney say that they have a good working relationship. I want to hear what you all think. 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Ernest first. Ernest, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I've always supported State's Attorney Marilyn Moses for her courage and things like that.
Yeah.
However, before I start, what I want to say, I got a bone to pick with her.
Okay.
Because when Anthony McCartney was there, she used to take calls from the individuals back to you. Now, what I don't want to see is her taking calls on those white stations. She's not going to take any calls over here. When she goes on these white stations, you know the ones I'm talking about.
Okay.
I don't expect to hear her taking any calls.
Well, that I don't know. I mean, that's that she stayed longer than she was supposed to stay, Ernest, in the first place. So, hello.
But getting to those cameras now, she's been I supported her in the prosecution of those officers in the Freddie Gray death in police custody.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I didn't like about it that James Butch McAdams, I had a bone to pick.
Well, Butch isn't on the show, Ernest. Come on. Butch is on another show, so
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm saying he attacked her every day. And,
I didn't know that.
Around with him. That's not good.
Okay.
And I'm going to move on. The thing is this, is she cannot use those, if you reenact something, if you have the appearance of doing something wrong as a police officer, acting in a criminal manner, then you can't use that as evidence.
Well, that's what she's saying.
You can't use it as evidence.
Right.
And the fact that Kevin Davis, who has allowed all this criminality to go on, I mean, like you said yesterday, Sean, this stuff happened after the consent decree.
Right.
Where they're robbing people and causing people to be killed and things of this nature.
Should Davis be fired, Ernest? I'll let you go on that.
Huh?
Should he be fired?
He should be brought up on charges, not only fired.
All right, Ernest. Thank you. Brought up on charges. Let's go to Kenneth. Let's go to Kenneth next. Kenneth, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, man?
I'm all right.
I'm just here to give the lady, kudos to come in when she came in and things have settled down. But I don't see her trying to be nobody's puppet. You know, I think she's going to be who she is and say what she want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's going to keep the FOP at bay. And I hope that the mayor does the same thing.
Okay.
You know, I'm not here to judge nobody today. I like to come with ideas from now on whenever I come on your show. I'm coming with ideas.
Well, I appreciate it, Kenneth. We need ideas. We need good ideas, brother. Thank you, Kenneth. Thank you for calling. Let's go to William in Cecil County. William, you're on First Edition. What's happening?
Yeah, how y'all doing today?
I'm doing good.
I want to commend her. I want to tell her that she's doing an outstanding job if she's still around or if she listens to the radio station because
she may be listening.
She has been bringing the heat down on where it needs to be brought down on, which is the police department, which is on the streets of Baltimore, these gangs and people out here killing one another because I want to live in the safe city of Baltimore. So I also wanted to know if she's going to run again because she was on another show and the question was asked, is she going to run? Because she got a pretty voice. He put his hat in to run for prosecuting attorney. And if she needs, she got me. If she needs, if she's going to run, I'm in her corner.
I think it's a pretty safe bet, William, that she's going to run again. I don't think there's much doubt about that, brother. Thank you.
The way she said it, she kind of said it like, you know. And then it was, you know, but then she said, I'm going to focus on Baltimore right now.
Well, I think a lot of people would be disappointed if she did not run again. I'll leave it at that. Let's go to Lewis in Baltimore. Lewis, you are on First Edition. How you doing, Lewis?
I think you know me as Lou.
Oh, Lou. Diamond Lou. What's happening, Lou?
I had the pleasure of meeting Miss Mosby for the first time at your grandmother's, was it 100th
birthday? 100th birthday, yes, sir.
Yeah. And, but more than that, Sean, the fact of the matter is, you know, what your listeners don't know, for almost 30 years, I taught criminal justice at the second largest criminal justice program on the East Coast, second to John Jay College.
American University?
At American University, mm-hmm. That's correct. And my comment is 2 points. Number one, Marilyn Mosby, in my opinion, and I'm speaking from a professional opinion in terms of understanding from an academic standpoint and from a perspective of a citizen of this city, she is a true jewel to this city, period. And the tragedy is the fact that we're dealing with some systemic social problems which relate into law enforcement that nobody can really solve. Nobody can really solve.
Right.
And the tragedy would be that the community, in effect, puts some other candidates out there and where the vote splits, and then you're going to get a state's attorney in there that you're not going to be happy with at all.
What
needs to happen, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is that the concerned citizens of Baltimore need to support this lady tooth and nail. Now, on the issue of...
Lewis, we got a lot of people we got to get to, Lou, so we got to cut it short. But we get the message, obviously. A lot of support out there for Marilyn Mosby, of course. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yose, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. We've opened the phone lines, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We're taking your comments about law enforcement in Baltimore City. We just finished our conversation with Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby. Some of the highlights from that conversation, I would say, are her absolute contradicting Kevin Davis as far as the whole notion of reenacting crime scenes in Baltimore. It cannot be done, according to the state's attorney. She says she has checked with every law enforcement agency, major law enforcement agency, mid-sized law enforcement agency across the United States. The only time it happened, according to the state's attorney, in another jurisdiction was Pueblo, Colorado. And in that situation, the police commissioner sided with the prosecutor that this it cannot be done, cannot reenact, especially in the era of video cameras, body cams worn by police officers. So it's a complete they are absolutely in disagreement on that issue. At the same time, she says she has a good working relationship with Kevin Davis. So there's that. And obviously, we're dealing with in our city several scandals of misconduct. The eighth officer indicted for racketeering, federally indicted for racketeering, Sergeant Thomas Allers. Yesterday, the news broke. We broke his name first, I believe, on the air. So against that backdrop, we had that conversation with the state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby. Now we want to have a conversation with you all. 410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Linda in Gwin Oak. Linda, you're on First Edition. How are you doing?
Hi. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing good.
All right. Well, the lady definitely got my vote. All the criticism that she has, suffered from and gone through, the lady is doing her job. And God got her back.
Okay.
And I just want to make a statement because it's very obvious. You know, corruption runs very deep. And this corruption is running deeper than those police officers.
Okay. Linda?
Some of them folk wearing them gowns, you know, some lawyers. Maybe this thing is deep. And there's been a lot of cover-up and patting those officers and wrongdoers on the back. They need to stop patting them on the back and making excuses for them. And you do the crime, you do the time.
Got it, Linda. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jeff next in Baltimore. Jeff, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Make an excuses for him.
Okay. So, Jeff. Okay, let's go to Alex in Baltimore. Alex, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
How you doing, Sean?
All right.
This is Alex. I wanted to ask if you could have Commissioner Davis on your show to explain why it is legal from his perspective and acceptable to reenact crime scenes. And if he cannot do so, which I believe he cannot, I would like for him to admit that he misspoke, he was wrong, and the state's attorney was right, and he needs to, after that, step down, step away, and be gone as police commissioner, because he spoke out of turn, he was incorrect, and it's just flat out wrong. And as police commissioner, you cannot be that wrong among many things on that issue. You can't promote doing that if it's not legal. Okay. I want him to come on your show and explain himself as to why it's legal and acceptable, which I know he can't do.
Well, Alex, thank you for your comment. We have had the commissioner on the show in previous a couple of times, I believe. He never has come in person. He's been on the phone. There is pretty much an open invitation for the police commission to come on the show, whether it be by phone or in the studio in person. I would love to have a conversation with him. I mean, that is a question that I would like to ask him. I mean, why does he keep saying, or why has he said on more than one occasion that reenactments are plausible? I mean, I'm using the word plausible, but I mean, he. I'm going to read from the story that we wrote. Now, again, we, our reporter on this story, wrote or said that the officer was clear. That was the impression that was given by the Baltimore Police Department. Marilyn Mosby, her office, has said unequivocally this officer has not been cleared. So, again, I have apologized on the air for my newspaper, and we will print a correction in next week's paper. But just to quote Commissioner Davis, he says, quote, "We must not misconstrue mistakes in judgment as criminality. Nothing questionable. Nothing questionable. The recreation was captured on another officer's body camera, and it is not staging." And he said further, "The fact that Marilyn Mosby is dropping cases connected to these body camera issues," he says, quote, "the decision to drop cases was a bad call." Marilyn Mosby disagrees vehemently, and she seems to have evidence across the nation to back her up on this. But the question remains, at least from the perspective of the police commissioner. Let's go to Rafiq, I believe, in Baltimore. Rafiq, is that how we pronounce your name?
Yes, that's correct. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I have one quick statement and a quick question. Uh-huh. There's an old Ottoman proverb, and it says, "Finding the innocence of a person is justice." And when we hold these prosecutors, these district attorneys, these magistrates and grand jury accountable to behave under common law and abandon color of law, which is statutory jurisdiction, then we can have justice in this land. And my question is, Marilyn Mosby, she stated that there's 93% felony convictions.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why isn't that the case when it comes to law enforcement? And that's my call. Thank you.
Okay, Rafiq, thank you for your comment. Let's go to
Is there any way you can get information on how someone can help Marilyn Mosby when the new election comes? Because I would like to help her. She's doing a wonderful job. And I take my hat off to that black sister.
All you have to do is call her office, Raquel, and volunteer, and I'm sure they will be happy to have you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Raquel, thank you. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Let's take one more call. Let's go to John in Ellicott City. John, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
How are you, Deshaun? This is quickie. I don't see what world does Commissioner Davis lives in that he thinks that a prosecutor can obtain a conviction when there is an enactment, given the suspicion that many of the citizens who would serve on those juries that is ridiculous.
Well, specifically about the Baltimore Police Department, given the number of tragic misconduct scandals that have riddled that department.
John, that are currently going on. So, I mean, the police department would not get any benefit of doubt. It would be a waste of a prosecutor's time, and he should be, I don't know, what is going on with that, Davis? Yeah. Who is he going to blame next?
That's a good question, John. Thank you for your call. And thank you all for calling in and giving your insights and thoughts on law enforcement in Baltimore. We appreciate you. We never take you for granted. And I want to thank Marilyn Mosby, the Baltimore City State's Attorney, for coming in and sitting down with me earlier in the hour. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in the second hour of the show. And you know what it is. It's the infamous, the notorious NWA Sports Report. We're going to have a couple of special guests, two ballplayers from the Morgan State University football team, Eli Staley, quarterback, and Josh Chase, running back for Morgan State. Plus, of course, the usual suspects, talking about Jim Brown, Aaron Rodgers, Kyrie Irving, and Floyd Mayweather. It's all coming up on the second hour of First Edition on the NWA. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition.